The minstrel boy to the war is gone. In the ranks of death you will find him. His father's sword he has girded on, and his wild harp's long behind him. Land of song, say the warrior bard, though all the world betrays thee, one sword at least thy rights shall guard, one faithful harp shall praise thee. The minstrel fell, but the foeman's chain could not bring that proud soul under. The harp he loved ne'er spoke again, for he tore its cords asunder, and said, no chain shall sully thee, thou soul of love and bravery. Thy songs were made for the pure and free, they shall never sound in slavery.
And welcome to Here We Stand. This is your host, Kevin Annett. It's March 8th. I love that song, The Minstrel Boy. It comes from the old country. And, you know, the song that are made for the pure and free will never sound in slavery, and that speaks to each of us listening today. We're going to be talking about how to defund the killers, pulling the plug on criminal church and state. My guest will be Andrew Patterson, who took a personal step in doing that by asking Revenue Canada, will my money be used to continue to cover up genocide? Because that's a crime against humanity and international law. And he's going to talk about what happened when he did that. That'll be in the middle of the show for about a half hour. Before that, I want to speak about a few things, really speaking to who you are who are listening today. You're people who don't need to have the problem explained to you. You know what it is. The question is, what are you going to do now when you feel alone, you feel isolated, because of the lack of awareness of the mass of people around you? There's a tendency on the part of folks like that to slip into despair. I know a good friend who, after going through the campaign about genocide in Canada for many years, has said, I felt so overwhelmed in the injustice of it, how the cover-up happened so easily. I felt so overwhelmed by it, I just gave up. I felt I couldn't do anything anymore. Well, we all need to step back at times. I love the stories of Jesus having to go off on his own into the desert to get reestablished and recentered. That's an essential part for everything we do. But don't forget, we're all different parts of the same thing, which is the tip of the spear. We all come back on track once we get right again with who we are. We're trying to do that with our program, Here We Stand. We're trying to unite you, the remnant, so we can act together, because we proved in Canada that you don't need many people to move mountains. That's because we, the remnant, were gathered together and we took action. We're going to talk a little bit about that today, and especially after the interview with Andrew, we're going to talk about some of the specific things you can do to help defund and stop these criminal churches and governments. ITCCS.org and murderbikedecree.com has a lot of the hard evidence you can use, but, for example, things like not paying taxes at all or ties to the church and government. It's easier than you think. These criminal bodies are very vulnerable, and we're going to give some examples later of what people have done besides Andrew to succeed in this. And also, don't forget as well that they are more afraid of us than we are, hopefully, of them. We've seen in practice what happens when people, even a few people, say, no, I'm not going to cooperate with the system anymore. There's three things we need to do in that process. Three simple lessons that we learned from Sun Tzu, our good buddy who wrote 3,000 years ago, wrote a good track called The Art of War. Sun Tzu said there's three things you've got to do. One, you define the ground of battle. You say what the battle is going to be on the terrain that you want. And he says if you do that, you've already won the victory. You've already won the battle because the enemy, no matter how large, has to respond to you. And we proved that in Canada in this campaign about genocide. So you define the ground of battle and the terms of battle. Secondly, you seize and hold the high ground. You take the moral and political and military high ground and you hold it and you negate their strength. And thirdly, you do the unexpected. You strike where they're most vulnerable and where they don't expect you. Sun Tzu said, one attack out of the night is much more frightening to an adversary than 100 attacks during the day. So remember that. And there's other tasks that we can do as individuals. We'll talk about that after the interview with Andrew. A few other points that I wanted to remind folks. We're now broadcast on the Veterans Today Network. VeteransToday.com is an affiliate with us now, so you can follow our programs there every week. They'll be posted up there, usually by about Tuesday. And our books, there's 7 of them we put out in the last 18 months. And one of them I'm going to quote from today, it's a real, one of the nicest thing, most effective things that I've ever written, Truth Teller's Shield, a manual for whistleblowers and hellraisers, and of course the Murder by Decree, the Crime of Genocide in Canada, all our hard evidence. You can get all those books online, Amazon.com. Just put in my name, Kevin Annett, and you'll see all of them. Two of the books, my latest book, Fallen, about the Vancouver Four, are the Native men who died in our struggle, who were killed by the Vancouver police and others. That book, Fallen, and Unrelenting, the biography of how this whole book, movement came about. Those two books are now on e-books as well. So look for those on Amazon. Of course, not wanting to plug that big corporation, but, you know, we're using the system against them, put it that way. Also, the whole question of where we're going with all this, sometimes what our vision can seem unreachable if you're thinking like an individual. And I love this anecdote from the Civil War. There's a battle that took place between the Union and Confederate armies, and the Union army was totally outnumbered. These regiments were outnumbered about 5-1 by the Confederates, who held the high ground. But the Confederate soldiers were so placed that they couldn't see their own strength. They were in little rocks and trees. All they could see was the strength of the approaching lines of thousands of guys lined up, but they couldn't see their own strength. So when the Union soldiers began climbing that summit, the Confederates all broke and ran because they didn't see their own strength, only the strength of the opponent. And now that's often what happens in our struggle. We can see all the problems. We get all that every day because of the curse of the Internet, if you like. We know all the problems and injustices and horrible things happening all the time. We're psychically and informationally overloaded, brothers and sisters, and so we can easily fall prey to despair. We've got to reverse it and see our own strength, but that can only come by standing on what's within us. Best thing to do is go out and sit on the grass, get away from the Internet, get away from the gloom and doom, and remember who we are. And from there, everything follows. People often say to me, tell me what I need to do. Say, your conscience tells you what you need to do. You don't need me to tell you what's necessary. So this show is to give you the inspiration and then the practical tools so you can take action, link up, form core groups in your community. We're going to talk in the second part of the show about how to do that. Starting with you as an individual, there's a lot you can do, and we'll get to that. Now, I'll just give a little bit of the background to this interview. I did it 4 years ago with Andrew Patterson, who is a member of our network, our Common Law Corridor on Vancouver Island. He makes reference to a website, hiddennolonger.com, which used to be our site. It's now defunct. If you actually go to that site now, you'll see some weird Japanese upholstery company or something. I don't know. So that hiddennolonger.com site is defunct. Ignore what his reference to that. All of the information that was ever on hiddennolonger.com is now on murderbydecree.com, just an addendum to what you're going to be listening to. So I'll turn it now over to my faithful assistant, Dawn, who will play this tape for us. And after it, I'll be back to talk about a number of things, a follow-up from what Andrew was saying. And we will carry on. So here's the interview with Andrew Patterson.
Hello, this is Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice, and welcome to the first program in our new series, We the Jury, A Forum Without Borders. We're looking at the whole issue of how would a reasonable person respond to crimes by their own government and churches. And we're honored today to have with us Andrew Patterson, who's taken a very direct step in answering that question. Andrew, welcome.
Thank you, Kevin. Good to be here.
Yeah. Now, do you want to give a little bit of a background as to what the issue is, what you're engaged in?
Sure, certainly. The broad topic, of course, is genocide. And in particular, genocide conducted by the Corporation of Canada and its three main churches, the Catholic Church, the United Church of Canada, in the Anglican Church of Canada. And just to go back in time, about 3 years or so, when I moved up to Lake Cowichan, I joined the local community radio station and started an open mouth program and started doing a number of shows about topics that I certainly found of interest and thought some listeners might find of interest. I covered topics such as geoengineering, the chemtrails, vaccine safety, a number of topics from the banking system, some of the fraud that's been exposed in the banking system, and general topics that were controversial and hopefully thought-provoking. I had a number of people call in and guests on the show, and I was trying to look at topics from a more scientific perspective, perhaps, or bring some logic to the topic and see if we could really find out what was going on. And in the course of looking for people to talk to and subjects to talk about, I came across your name and some of the work that you had done, and gave you a call, and you agreed to meet with me, and we got together when the diary was first being screened. You'd produced it, and for listeners, watchers who are not familiar, the diary is a slightly fictionalized account of your own story.
Just slightly.
Just slightly, at any rate. And so what happened then, of course, is I started being introduced to the topic of Canada's so-called residential schools, and I'll say straight up, I think that's a terrible term. Calling them death camps is far more accurate from the data that I've seen. And one of the things you shared with me, apart from the documentary Unrepentant, which hopefully everyone is familiar with and has watched, and if you haven't, please do watch it. You can find it at hiddennolonger.com. The other thing you'll find at that website is your book, Hidden No Longer, Canada's Hidden Holocaust. Well, it's not hidden any longer. And for some people, they won't be familiar with the term Canadian Holocaust, or used to hearing the terms Holocaust in other contexts. But the fact of the matter is there has been a Holocaust in Canada from a Native or Indian perspective. And I'll have to say right up, I can't be politically correct with terms with describing people, so I apologize. It's not my intention to offend anyone. But
let me just ask you a question about that, because I've always been curious how a mainstream, ordinary Canadian reacts when they see the evidence, you know, of so many children dying, of an obvious intent by church and government to kill off these kids over a century. So what was your kind of visceral, immediate reaction when you saw this evidence online?
Well, actually, I didn't see it online first. I read the book, and the first thing it did was make me cry. It was extremely upsetting to read. It took me over a month to get through the book. It's 425 pages, but I can usually get through material more quickly. But I would get to a point where I'd go through two or three pages, and I had to stop reading and to process and digest that which I was reading. I knew things were bad, but I didn't realize that death rates were as high as 50% per year in some of these schools. The types of tortures that were employed, the effect it must have had on the parents to see their children taken away, and in most cases, never to be seen again. This is a destruction of people, a destruction of culture, and I'm going to cut straight to it. The purpose of genocide, as far as I can determine, is theft. Theft of land, theft of resources, theft of culture, theft of people.
And it doesn't stop.
And it doesn't stop. And people have asked me, well, is the genocide ongoing? Well, I think the simple answer to that, if the purpose of genocide is theft, if the stolen goods haven't been returned, then I would have to argue that, yes, the genocide is ongoing, never mind the disproportionate number of Indians in Canadian prisons.
Well, yeah, and I remember a really brilliant phrase you use with friends and others who are not aware of this stuff yet is they will often say, well, we didn't cause these crimes.
Sure.
But you say, no, but we're living off the avails of genocide.
Yeah. We are.
That's a good term.
People are continuing to benefit from the theft of land and resources. Some people are. I should point out that a lot of people are not. I'm living in Lake Cowichan, and I watch the logging trucks go through all day, every day, and there's very little benefit returned to the local community. You know, obviously, some people are making some money, but locally, not a lot.
And to situate this, let's say, tell the listeners where you're actually living. Where are
sure.
we in the world?
Yes, living in a town called Lake Cowichan, on Cowichan Lake, in the middle of Vancouver Island, on the west coast of the landmass, some call Canada, some call Turtle Island.
Mm-hmm. So, you saw the material, and then
Yes, what happened is I read it, and you told me that the book, we don't have one here to show, but it's a 425-page book. And you had given several copies to university libraries, college libraries, and so on, and they were disappearing off the shelves. They were being taken out and not returned, big surprise. So I took it upon myself, 2.5 years ago now, to scan the book and put it up online at hiddenalonger.com. So that caused me to read it a second time, reinforcing the message. And of course, if very quickly, what people have to know about the book is not only is there a great collection of eyewitness testimony, both from survivors and from people involved in the staffing of the schools, there are also a tremendous number of government documents in there which verify what's being said, including Dr. Peter Bryce, who was publishing information about these crimes over 100 years ago.
Now, I should just say for the people who will be watching this on YouTube, we will be putting up samples of these documents as
and links. Speaking. Yeah, we'll have links for, and so on. So what happened? That went up, and I looked at it in some more detail, and I realized that I had a moral and a legal obligation to do something about this. Because of my background, I am familiar with the Nuremberg Principles, of which there are seven. Very briefly, the Nuremberg Principles are what came out of the Nuremberg Tribunals, which were held in 1948 to 1950 in Nuremberg, where Nazi war criminals were tried, and in some cases convicted, and in many cases either hung or imprisoned for life. And as a result of the crimes committed by the Nazis during World War II, the Nuremberg Principles were developed with an attitude of this will never happen again. In fact, as far as I can tell, when we're talking about the brave Canadian men and women who gave their lives and bodies in World War II, if there's one document that they fought to see produced, it would be the Nuremberg Principles, the principles that make it clear that we as individuals do have moral obligations to not follow illegal and immoral orders. We each have an obligation. Mm-hmm. And I would say to any Canadian, to any human being, look at the Nuremberg Principles. If you're not familiar with them, they should be up on every wall in every school, as far as I'm concerned.
Now, this was passed at the United Nations, I think, in 1950 or something.
I believe it was adopted by the United Nations in 1950. So it is the basis of international law, the basis of the idea of crimes against peace, crimes against humanity, war crimes, and genocide. Now, this the Nuremberg Principles have been codified in a more recent document known as the Rome Statute, which is the United Nations foundation of the ICC, the International Criminal Court. And again, easy to find online. Just type in the Rome Statute into your favorite search engine and you'll find it. Take a look at Article 25, Section 3, Subsection C, where again it makes it absolutely clear that as individuals we can be held individually liable if we aid and abet ongoing crimes or criminal organizations. So knowing about this moral and lawful and legal obligation under international law, I decided what I needed to do was find out if the Canadian government were aware and of the genocide that they were committing and were going to continue to support it. So I wrote a notice to the then Minister of National Revenue, Keith Ashfield. And then I had really three sections. And this was a notarized notice. I took it to my notary and had it verified that it was my signature and sent it registered mail. And then the first part, I said to the minister, look, I've become aware of information, of evidence of genocide, crimes against humanity, war crimes committed by candidates, churches, and or agents. So here I'm just putting it out. Look, I've come into this body of knowledge, this evidence. The next thing was I wanted to limit my own liability and saying, look, you know, you've asked me to file returns. I just need your personal assurance that any funds that I remit to you will not be used by the government of Canada or nor its agents to commit genocide, crimes against humanity, war crimes, crimes against peace.
Or to conceal those, and that's an important point because...
Exactly.
What was the date of that first letter you sent?
This notice is July... mid-July 2010.
Now, this was after the announcement of this so-called Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Right.
And I remember I was talking about that because clearly the TRC's mandate said that it didn't have the power to investigate these crimes. In fact, it had the power to even silence people.
I would say the TRC mandate is further evidence of ongoing genocide in Canada.
Okay, so it was that as well that prompted you
about the absolutely.
The government's whitewash, in other words.
Yes, and I noticed they called it exactly the same thing as the commission in South Africa. But if you look at the mandate of the South African TRC and compare it with Canada's, they're completely different. They may have the same name, but because the mandate is so much different, whereas the TRC in South Africa had the ability to lay criminal charges.
Absolutely. And another big difference is that in South Africa, they didn't grant...
There was no immunity.
Immunity at all.
Prosecution.
But whereas in Canada, right at the very beginning, they said no one will be prosecuted for these things.
Yeah.
So naturally, the church has signed on, right?
Well, this is the thing. No one, if people saying, is the genocide ongoing? Well, no one has been even charged with any crime in Canada, let alone convicted. No evidence, there's no indication that there's any move afoot to do anything like that.
Not a single person has ever been tried or brought to trial for the death of a child in a residential school, still to this day.
Yeah, even though upwards of 50,000 were murdered.
Okay, now, you wrote the letter.
Right.
Do you want to continue talking to
the letter? Sure, so I sent the notice and I gave a time limit. Because you get to talk about the letter, the second part was, look, I just want to make sure that I'm not going to be liable. I'm aware of my lawful and moral and legal obligations under international law. So I looked for the minister's personal assurance that the crimes and the crime of cover-up would not continue. And then saying, and if you can't give me your assurance, then this is your agreement that you are doing these things,
right,
that we now have a contract. So from my perspective, I now have, because Ashfield did write back, he would not give me his personal assurance, rather saying that the purpose of my notice was unclear. And again, I'll make the notice available so people can read for themselves and decide as to its clarity.
He said it was unclear.
Yes, the meaning was unclear, but went on to assure me that I had to do as I was told. And at this point, be really clear that as a previous Canadian citizen, I always filed and played straight according to the rules. The one time I was audited, there was a zero change.
But you're saying to the government, I need your reassurance that I'm not going to be breaking the law by paying you taxes.
That's right.
That's essentially the issue.
That's right. I just want to make sure that I'm not going to be held liable. Now that I'm aware of this evidence, I just want to make sure I'm not going to be held liable. Will you take the liability?
So you're trying to follow the law.
Yes.
And you're asking the government if they'll do the same.
That's right.
So their answer was, initially?
That they don't understand what I'm talking about.
Okay. So then what did you do?
I carried on to... whenever a CRA agent would contact me, first thing I would do is seek their personal assurance that any funds remitted to them wouldn't be used to commit crimes.
CRA, by the way, is Canadian Revenue Agency.
Canada Revenue Agency, yes, equivalent to IRS in the United States or Inland Revenue in Great Britain, I suppose.
So
they're the private collection company for the private corporation of Canada.
So you said to them that... Say that again, what you said to CRA.
Again, all I'm looking for is your personal assurance that any funds that I remit to you will not be used to commit crimes, in a word.
Okay. And what did they say?
No one will give me their assurance. So to date, not one individual will give me any verbal reassurance, let alone written.
Okay. But what have they done?
What they have done instead is seized my company bank account. They have issued third-party collection notices to my customers so that customers are told that they have to pay CRA instead of paying me.
Are they allowed to do that? They intervene between...
It's my understanding that they're third-party interlopers and that these third-party collection notices have been ruled against by the Supreme Court of Canada.
Well, that's what I thought. A third party is not allowed to intervene in the contractual relationship between
parties. And again, The Canadian Revenue Agency, rather than dealing with me directly and addressing these issues in writing, as I am, there's been a lot of correspondence. They simply will not address it. All they can say is, we don't see what this has to do with the Income Tax Act.
But they're threatening your customers. Now, what kind of business do you operate, by the way?
We have my wife and I have a web design and hosting business. We don't do any hosting. We've been doing design. But essentially, they're going after us again. Again, rather than deal with us directly on this and write to us and address the concerns and it's just a case of we don't know what you're talking about, you have to pay your taxes. And I've asked them, are you counseling me to ignore the Rome Statute? Which, by the way, in Canada, when you counsel someone to commit an offense, I believe you can get a jail sentence of up to 12 years.
So the government is actually breaking the law, international law, by doing
it. In my view. And there are scholars such as Professor Francis Boyle at the University of Illinois who apparently agree with me. And this is the point, that I am not breaking any law here. This isn't a case of civil disobedience. This is a case of, I believe, I'm standing on the law, I've shown the law, I've quoted the relevant international and Canadian statutes, and again, asking the Canadian Revenue Agency and the Canadian government to deal with me at the level of the law, but instead they won't address it, they won't discuss any of that with me. All they will do instead is just, you know, they're turning up like the mafia, saying you owe money, you owe money, you owe money, and taking any and every means to try and get it out.
They're also disparaging you in the eyes of your customers.
They're absolutely trying to. They're trying to embarrass us. They've done things like phone my landlord and, again, trying to embarrass us with the line that, well, if you don't pay your taxes, you're not paying for your share of the roads and schools. And
what have they said to your landlord?
Oh, just how's he paying you, and so on. And,
Did your landlord say anything?
No, he said, well, he pays on time. That's all I care about.
Yeah.
But, I will have to say that because I imagine the tax collector around the world has always been vilified, but in general, Canadians don't seem to have a lot of time for the Canada Revenue Agency.
Now, so where do things stand now? They've threatened your customers. You're under, obviously, a lot of economic pressure from them. Has your livelihood been affected by this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this has cost us thousands of dollars in terms of lost customers, lost revenue, inability to bill customers for work that we do, because if we do, the people that we're billing have to pay Canada Revenue Agency rather than us.
You have a family to support.
Yeah, exactly. And again, rather than deal with us directly, lawfully, manfully, I would add, all they can do is run around and try and disparage us and try and make us feel that we should be embarrassed because we're not paying our taxes. And I want to be very clear as well, the amount of money that we're talking about is minimal. You know, we're talking, $3,000 or $4,000 here.
So why do you think they're going after you like this?
I can only think that, and again, this is speculation on my part, that if they actually acknowledge the genocide and that funding them is funding genocide, then that would be the reason every other Canadian is looking to not pay their taxes. Now, I want to be clear, this isn't about not paying my taxes. I believe in doing the right thing and pulling my weight in all of this. This is not about that. This is about saying, look, there's serious crimes being committed and they have to stop. And people say, oh, Canada does this and it's great and it does that. It's like talking about the uncle, who provides well at Christmas
and then beats his kids.
Yeah, exactly. Or murders his wife. It doesn't matter how good a man he is. If he murders his wife, he stands trial for murder, and if convicted, he goes to jail. That's the way we work.
We're not.
It doesn't matter how good you were in every other aspect of your life.
The basic issue is we are not obligated and are supposed to not fund crimes, and you're being asked to.
I'm more than asked to. I'm being told that if I don't, that they will starve me out.
Okay. So they're asking you to collude in a crime.
Yes.
Right.
In fact, they're insisting. So is that not another crime?
So where do things go now? What do you want to do?
Well, what I would like to do is find a court of competent jurisdiction. And I would point out that any Crown court is not a court of competent jurisdiction because the Crown is implicated in these crimes. And so I'm looking at the International Common Law Court of Justice and looking for injunctive relief. To issue an injunction against Canada Revenue Agency, asking them to deal with the issue directly or leave us alone and leave our customers alone so we can just get on with living. And deal with me directly on the issue and stop trying to be a sneaky bee.
Well, this is the kind of thing that is perfect for our International Common Law Court of Justice because it's a case of somebody actually trying to follow international law concerning genocide in Canada, which is our first case that's been posted up online.
Well, this is the case. This is the thing. I'm not breaking any laws. I'm standing on the law. I'm quoting the law. I'm not a rebel. I'm not a dissenter. per se.
You're a small-C conservative businessman.
A small-C conservative businessman who believes that people should be held accountable for their actions. That's
exactly.
It. And if a society won't back me on that, then we have to look at the society
right. And
go, how is it so sick that people won't stand up and speak up and defend children who are being raped and murdered?
Right. Let's be clear about that, too. We're not talking about crimes that ended in 1989 or whenever all the residential schools closed. These are ongoing crimes against humanity.
Yeah.
Look,
one thing that we can be clear of here in British Columbia is that the residential schools, and I think it's true across North America, simply morphed into child protective services.
Foster care.
Mm-hmm. This is spoken to by the fact that the United Nations, back in 1999, looking at the top cities for child trafficking, number one, not surprising, was Bangkok in Thailand. Number two was Rotterdam in Europe. And number three is Vancouver.
Yeah.
The Indian children going out and the Asian children coming in. And so Vancouver is a huge hub for the child flesh market.
Mm-hmm. And there have been judges in the BC Supreme Court named by insiders as have been part of that trafficking.
Yes. Yeah. Well, this is what we find very sadly, and it seems to be a universal, that the pedophilia is most rampant as we move up into the elite circles. What's going on in England with Jimmy Savile, who is now dead, is just further evidence of that.
Right.
You know, that's perhaps a different topic, but just the same.
Well, it's all connected because we're talking about how to pull a plug on these crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And the first obligation is for citizens not, well, to be aware, first of all, and then based on the awareness, as you experienced, not funding, not being an accessory.
Well,
to a crime.
One of the things we hear is, you know, taking the law into our own hands. Well, the law has always been in our hands, except that when it's been usurped by tyrants. And this is the whole point, is that it's not up to the police to enforce the law. It's up to all of us to enforce it. The police are the technicians who make sure that it's done properly and correctly. And I want to be very clear that I'm a huge proponent of due process, that people are entitled to due process. They're entitled to a fair trial if charged. And I also do not support the death penalty in any way. I believe that someone is convicted of a serious crime like this, that a jail term in humane conditions is, in fact, the way to go. Give people a chance to reflect upon what they've done. And, so what am I looking for? I'm looking for injunctive relief against the Canada Revenue Agency and perhaps for people to take a look at their obligations under international law,
mm-hmm.
as well as their own morality. And because, after all, it really is up to us to insist on the rules being followed. If we don't insist that the rules are followed, we see what happens, the rules get broken.
Right. Now,
impunity.
How far are you willing to go on this?
Well, I guess that remains to be seen. My moral convictions are such that I don't see what alternative we have except to continue to say that we cannot support crime.
Exactly.
How far that goes, I really can't say. I would like to think that there are enough good people at Canada Revenue Agency and working within the Government of Canada that they will understand what this is about, that they will do their own investigations, become aware of the heinous crimes that have been committed and continue to be committed, cover-up of these crimes. Because a lot of people, here's another one that we often hear, is, oh, isn't this just history? It's historical. Well, if this is a historical topic, then the documents held by the churches and governments under lock and key, the sealed documents, should be made public. The fact that these documents are not public speaks to the fact that if these documents come out, it's going to create trouble for these institutions and people in these institutions. So here's what I would say. If this matter is not historical to them, why should it be historical to us?
Mm-hmm. And they're clearly covering it up by not releasing these documents.
That's the only conclusion we can come to. What other motive would they have for retaining them?
And by not investigating these mass grave sites that we've identified all over Canada near the former residential schools.
Well, that's another point to the Canadian attitude, if you will, is a couple of years ago after the Olympics, the Winter Olympics at Whistler, a number of sled dogs were killed because of economic reasons, we're told.
And there was an outcry.
And there was a hue and outcry. It was global. How could this happen? And $250,000 was committed to digging in this mass grave of dogs. 10 dogs were unearthed. That's $25,000 per dog. Canadians will be happy to spend $25,000 to dig up a dog to prove a crime that was already admitted to, by the way. And yet we've got thousands and thousands of dead children and babies buried across Canada. And the attitude towards digging these graves, people run in the other direction. Oh, no, no, can't do that. That's sacred ground. Or the other extreme, who cares? It's just a bunch of dead Indians.
Right. Or you're making it up and there's no proof, which is ridiculous now because the government's even admitted now that the death rate was that huge. So the question is, where did 50,000 bodies go? Andrew, just in closing, is there a way that if people can help you or want to be involved and do what you're doing, they can get a hold of you?
Yeah, they can contact me. Again, it's not my place to tell anyone else what to do or how to act. It's up to each of us to connect with our own conscience and sense of ethics and morality. In terms of helping me, quite frankly, we're skint as a result of the action we're taking, and struggling financially. If anyone feels like helping me, that would be most welcome.
How do they get a hold of you?
I would say at this stage probably the best way is through you at the ITCCS. If they can email you directly.
All right.
Contact me.
Hiddenfromhistory1@gmail.com. And let me just say, since you mentioned ITCCS, it seems on the basis of learning this thing, it's one of those things that prompted you to get involved in our tribunal.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing, is I was brought up like any other white Canadian in terms of given a history in school that made everything look, if not perfect, at least okay, that there were good intentions of assimilation and, you know, taming the wild savage, those sorts of myths. So I get it when most Canadians are not aware. I will say this. What is interesting is, as I've exposed people to this information, I would have to say, by and large, most people are not motivated to take any action, and I've looked at that, and I can only think either A, they're benefiting from the system the way it is, and there's nothing in it for them to see a change, or B, just a case of simple racism. They're just Indians. Who cares? And I don't mean to be offensive saying that, but that is the attitude I've run into repeatedly. Again, people are going to have to look at their own conscience and decide what to do. But that said, it comes back to, we're standing on the law here. The law says we have a moral, ethical, and legal obligation, lawful obligation, to not support these crimes.
The crimes of the Canadian government, the Crown of England, the Vatican, the churches of Canada, Protestant, Catholic. Andrew, thank you, and we'll follow this with more updates about Andrew's struggle and the responses of the government and how others can be involved in this. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
And we're back. And if you want more information on that, be sure to write us at, a number of places, but write to itccsoffice@gmail.com. Now, for the last part of the show, I want to talk a little bit about the background for this, why this whole interview is very relevant now. This month, October, is leading up to the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, October 31st, when Martin Luther unveiled and began a revolution much bigger than he realized at the time. What it basically did was put a nail in the coffin of thousands of years of control over the human mind. The Reformation not only shattered the religious power of the Vatican, but every level. It unleashed really the modern age of theoretical separation of church and state, of free conscience, and so all the liberties we take for granted. It began on that day on October 31st, 1517. Now, in commemoration of that, programs this month are going to be very much geared towards creating both a political and a spiritual alternative to that system that's still very much in place, emanating out of Rome, the corporatocracy, as we call it, first corporation on the planet, the Vatican, set up the model for the corporatocracy, the abolition, really, of all democratic society, replaced by the super state in alliance with big money. Hitler and Mussolini really pioneered the modern corporation, the permanent arms economy, and the system that's really governing the formal world. And what we need to do is create political and spiritual alternatives. So there is that spiritual movement in place. We talked about them, the Covenanters, who are backing this program, Here We Stand, that are setting up alternative communities, spiritual communities, to pull people out of these false churches. So the very first thing we say to people in terms of these genocidal churches is you have to leave them. At a minimum, you have to stop giving them money because, as Andrew and others have said so well, you're contributing to a crime and you can be arrested and charged under international law if you put a dime in the collection plate of the Catholic, Anglican, United Churches in Canada, the Catholic and Church of England, anywhere in the world. That's the first thing. You've got to get out. And you've got to form your own independent Christian communities if you're a Christian, or other communities that are not contributing to the system. So that's an emphasis. The programs this month, next week, we're going to be doing an interview again with the two women in Pennsylvania who are leading a campaign to set up home rule to stop the fracking that is being ordered by the corporatocracy, the government, and the state courts in alliance with PG&E company, which is causing the frack destruction of their watershed. The Winchisons, Judy and Stacy Winchison, are going to be describing how their community is taking back local power to stop that. That's going to be next week. Week after that, we'll be having more input about the spiritual covenant or movement and how people can use it as a way to get these churches. Because the one thing these murderous churches understand is the loss of members, the loss of money. That's the main thing they worry about, loss of revenue. That's where they're most vulnerable, and as Sun Tzu said, that's where you have to hit them, where they're vulnerable. So that's going to be the shows in the upcoming weeks. But in terms of the further background, like I said earlier in the show, many of us are operating as individuals. I said last week that doing a headcount, something like 80% or more of the people either listening to this program or its predecessor, Radio Free Canada, or involved in the Republic and the common law movement, they're living in small towns. They're not even in cities. It's very interesting. The people who seem to be more awake are not in the urban matrix. They're on their own. They're living in small towns or even farming communities. And it's kind of like a guerrilla movement. You don't operate at the center of power. You operate from the margin and go in. You set up liberated communities. You set up free thinking and free living zones where you can train the next generation and then use them to send them back where people are most captive. So it's kind of a working in from the margin strategy, which when you look at is a very effective strategy. It's how, for example, the civil rights movement in America operated. The local black community could not lead that struggle often because the level of terror and violence was so huge. They needed the outside support. They needed the workshops and training programs where they could leave their communities, get invigorated by contact with other people, and then sent back into the community. You know, in many ways, that's got to be our strategy because we find when we try to work in these urban settings and places where people are, their minds are so overwhelmed by the despair and the madness that you get over the internet and just living in the city, that people are too encumbered to do anything. I had a recent example of that, of two people in Toronto who were very active on our network. They just collapsed under the stress of all of these attacks that we're facing every day, the Toronto police coming in and evicting people without notice. One woman tried to stop them. You know, she was in jail for months for having to do it. From having done that, I mean, just this level of struggle, we've got to work from the outside in. So it's building our bases where we can find recovery and train people and then send those cadre in on the basis of that to take action. Now, of course, we're starting with individuals, those 80% or more of you who are listening to this on your lonesome. What you need to do, here's some practical things. There's four basic things you can do as an individual if you're taking on this genocidal system, or specifically these churches. First of all, you can educate people. You can do that over your blog site. You can get your local library to order our books. You can start handing out flyers in the community and talking to people. And that's a simple way to start to gather numbers. You need the numbers. You need that periphery around you if you're going to build a core group. You can do research into the local crimes and intel, It's, you know, no movement ever succeeds without the right intelligence, and we need people on the ground to dig that up. We've had people, for example, one of the ways that in Vancouver we started is we just had people on the street, homeless people. I'd go up to folks living on the street who were near the Vancouver Club, where the children are brought in every Friday, Saturday night and trafficked there to wealthy men and women, especially in the who are in the churches. And the homeless people were telling me all the information, who was coming in, what time they were coming in. You can do that. Find the people who know and get to know them, get the information. Also, guerrilla actions on your own. Here's a perfect example of what you can do with minimal effort, which will create a panic in these churches. We have a whole bunch of stickers that we can send to you if you just write to us at thecommonland@gmail.com. These stickers say things like, do not enter this church, it's guilty of crimes against humanity, read more at murderbydecree.com. Or this church has been declared a criminal body under common law. You're obligated not to enter it or give money. We find when we put those stickers up, all hell breaks loose. We start getting letters from churches threatening to sue us. I mean, all of this stuff is showing that it's really provoking them to even stick those stickers up. We have people go in, and here's something you can do. Just go to a church service, open the hymn book, start putting the stickers on the pages, close the hymn book, or put them in the Bible so that somebody a week from now reading it will see that sticker. That sends the opposition into a tailspin of panic, let me tell you. And that's something that any one of you can do with enormous results. So there's an example. We also produced a little pamphlet, which we're going to have out soon, called Church Stopper's Manual, 30 Ways You Can Shut Down the Antichrist in Your Community. It uses humor, which is a very important weapon. We need humor as a weapon, brothers and sisters. So we'll be sending out to any of you who want it, along with those stickers, free of charge. Just send us your address. We'll mail them to you. You can start stickering the Catholic, Anglican, and United Churches in your community. And watch the reaction and maelstrom that breaks out. I'm telling you, we've been through it. It does. You see, that's the trouble when they're guilty. They may have got away with it, with the crime in the short run. They may have absolved themselves and never done a time in jail, but they know they're guilty. They know the witnesses are still around. They know they can end up in jail once we inaugurate these common law courts and start serving the warrants. That's down the road a bit. We need the numbers first. We need the core groups that will then convene the common law assemblies and courts and appoint our own sheriffs that will go to these arrests. They and we know that that's down the road, but we need to do these first steps first. So those are some things you can do as an individual. But those of you who are more than one person, here's what we try to do. We set up action teams of 2 to 5 people. These are core groups, and the reason we keep them small is for a simple reason, because over the years we've had 3 different organizations destroyed from within, because the bigger you are, the more you can be taken down. And we found that with the first tribunal in 1998 in Vancouver, got infiltrated and destroyed. That's where a lot of the smears about me personally started from. So you don't build big organizations, you build small action groups of 2 to 5 people. You can strike and fade back into the night. Nobody knows you. You can't be infiltrated because everybody knows each other. And the cops and others don't know who you are because you're just a few people. Here's an example. A 5-person action team goes to a church, 2 people leafleting, 1 person filming it, you're the videographer, 1 person on the bullhorn talking to the people going in, and another person being the media spokesperson when the cops and the press come by. That 5 team can strike in an unpredicted way. And remember, do what Sun Tzu says. Strike, don't give notice of where you're going to go. Just show up one day and then one day at another church. You can go inside, infiltrate the mass like we did very effectively, and that's something they're really afraid of when you do that, or just stand outside. Judge it on your own. That's the point. You've got to use your own judgment on these things and learn from your own experiences. The most important thing is that you keep doing it. You don't just do it once or twice. That achieves nothing. You have to do it again and again. It's got to become the new focus of your life, not just on this issue, but on any issue. We've got to realize that we're in this for the long haul. And it's really a matter of replacing an old conditioned slave instinct that was given to us. That slave instinct said, what is going to happen to me if I do this? And that keeps everybody in chains. It's got to be replaced with the instinct, what's going to happen to us if I don't do this? You know, what's going to happen to those children tomorrow who are going to die if I don't do this? And that outrage and determination and love is going to carry you forward day after day. It's worked for me. So when you have your core group, keep functioning. Hold weekly meetings to educate one another. hold weekly public events, hold regular actions. We've got a whole handbook of how to do that. And again, in the last few minutes, I want to share some of that. It's called The Truth Teller Shield, a manual for whistleblowers and hellraisers. Let me read to you a quote from that, from Saul Alinsky, who led community organizers for many years in Chicago. Very important quote. Anyone can see through a lie, unless he has need of that lie. And everything you've ever been taught about how society runs is a lie that only serves the interests of a wealthy and invisible few. Your job as organizers is to help people think, not to think for them. When you help people think, that begins by helping them realize that their own minds have betrayed them because they are not their own. But their minds belong to those of other people who have trapped them. And people will break out from that trap only by getting kicked in the teeth enough times by the system and having the courage and clarity to learn from themselves what's really going on and what's really true and false. That's not something that can be taught to them by anything else than their own experience and the capacity to understand and own that experience, unquote. Now, that's very important. We don't learn and grow from reading something on the internet. It might give us a few clues and inspiration, but that's it. It ends there. Learning stuff on the internet is not an end in itself, friends. It's the beginning of something. What really carries us on is our own practical experience and having gotten screwed and victimized and kicked in the teeth. We don't want to shun or run from that pain. We want to embrace it. That's also the way to overcome our fear of pain. You embrace it. You say, what's this going to teach me? What am I going to learn from this that I can show other people? You take that experience and you act on it, and then you go out in the world and start doing these things we've been talking about. Here's a few do's and don'ts, though. When you have your group, do not make a statement that you can't back up with evidence and proof. Do not engage in name-calling, obscenities, personal attacks, or incitements to physical violence. Do not be provoked into angry, impulsive remarks. Do not have anyone else speak on your behalf or speak in the name of your efforts without first approving their remarks. Do not associate with unstable individuals with their own axes to grind or with dubious, unrelated causes, lest you and your campaign be found guilty by association. Do not accept money or endorsements from people who or groups you don't know. And do not walk into obvious setups or entrapments, especially sexual or financial ones. In other words, don't be stupid. Well, I mean, I guess that's common sense, but you'd be amazed how often common sense flees from people when they're under conditions of stress and when they're being attacked. And that's, of course, what they always want us to be in, stress, feeling attacked, feeling isolated and marginalized. But don't forget, when we overcome that, we realize that the truth itself is our real therapy. We don't recover by getting a therapist to talk to us or by going on some kind of singular ego-based trip of, I'm going to get better now. No, therapy, in the original Greek word therapia, meant to lift the burden from one another. It's not an individual act. We help each other grow. And I found that when we started Occupying the Churches, that brilliant experience, beautiful experience, when William Coombs, a native man in Vancouver, who I talk about in the book Fallen, when he walked into the church with us for the first time ever, he was terrified before that of going near these churches because he'd been electric cattle prod and sodomized by Catholic churches at a young age, Catholic priests. He was in there, that church, that day because he didn't want to let us down, he said to me. He didn't want to let any of us down, so he was there, and he was happy that day because he'd overcome his fear. He did that in the company of 50 other people who also had lost their fear, not on his own. So let's remember that. This is a joint effort, brothers and sisters. We're in this together once you make the commitment. Now, we're almost out of time. I wanted to give that those practical things you can start doing, but the important thing is not listening to this and doing nothing. You've got to write back to me, thecommonland@gmail.com. Thecommonland@gmail.com. Write to me. I will send you all this information. We'll start setting up those cell groups and action groups in your community. And tune in as well next week, Here We Stand. That's bbsradio.com/Here We Stand. And also get those books. Go to amazon.com. I'm not doing this for the fun of it. Well, I guess I am for the fun of it, yes. It's really fun sticking a cattle prod into the system rather than allowing them to do that to innocent kids. Yes, let's start doing it back, folks, in a spirit of love and truth. And also non-cooperation, as we've been hearing today. Withhold those taxes, folks. And we will give you information about how to do that. And so please tune in next week. Follow all of our work at murderbydecree.com and itccs.org. There'll be more of this. And just take what you've heard today, tell others about it, and tune in again every week, and do what some folks in London, Ontario have done, which is they gather every week to listen to this program, 6 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. GMT, 3 p.m. Pacific. Get a group of your friends together and just sit and listen. And then after, talk about the show. What have you learned here? How can we apply it in our community? Think of one thing you can do in your community to identify a crime going on and take steps that will lead toward gathering people together outside the system, your own local people's assembly, that can lawfully inaugurate a common law court and that can bring charges against people outside the system. Then you'll see action starting. A handful of people taking action in their own name causes incredible ripples and will bring down any system of oppression. We've proven it in practice. So thecommonland@gmail.com. Write me back, brothers and sisters. Until next week, stay strong, stay clear. This is Kevin Annett. I thank you.
To the borders, Vermonters, come down with your breeches of deerskin and jackets of brown, with your red woolen caps and your moccasins. Come to the gathering summons of trumpet and drum. Come down with your rifle, let gray wolf and fox.